Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. And I know you guys have not heard from us in a couple of weeks. It's been a very busy couple of weeks for both of us. Obviously, we had the All-Star break, but Rick has had some lot going on in his life, and I also took a trip out to the Capes where I visited Fenway and saw a Cape Cod League game. Rick, what's going on in your life that makes things so crazy?
July has been, it's been a month. Our daughter was born July 1st, so that's kicked things off, which was a pleasant early surprise, but you know, we were also supposed to close on a house in June, which didn't happen until the middle of July, which actually happened to do 2 days before we were able to bring our daughter home. So from middle of July on, it's been, taking care of our daughter and then taking care of trying to get the house together. And we've had some help, thankfully, but it's just been a chaotic and stressful is one word. I could probably use some more colorful language to describe how this past couple of weeks have been, but I mean, it's all good things. So it's just, going to take some time to get all the pieces put in place and get it settled down and get everyone, settled in here. But yeah, it's been a crazy month, and but there's finally, it's starting to slow down. Like this week's been normal. It's been like the first normal week for me in about a month so far, so we're getting there.
Well, good to hear everything settling in. I mean, it's a bunch of exciting things going on in your life. I understand, though, that comes with sort of the hecticness of it all, but cool to hear everything's working itself out, and glad to have us back on the podcast, get us back on regular schedule. I mean, we were sort of lucky to have the All-Star break, so not really that much has happened since we last recorded. No incredibly crazy trades. We'll obviously talk about all the minor trades that have occurred over the past couple of weeks, but the All-Star break wasn't super exciting or anything. So we are now back on schedule without having missed so much. I think we should just get into it. It's going to be a podcast of covering the transactions and injuries from the past couple of weeks, which is the majority of what's occurred. And then we will look ahead to the trade line, which is occurring in 6 days on August 3rd. That's going to be a Monday. So we're recording today on Tuesday. And by the time we record next week, we'll be able to cover the aftermath of all of those trades. But let's just jump right into the news and notes from the past couple of weeks. We'll sort of go team by team, as basically every team had some notable move. If we don't mention a team that you're looking for, that likely means that they were lucky to avoid any personnel changes or injury. So we'll start with an unfortunate bullpen in the Giants. They had some good news as Keaton Wynn was activated from the 15-day IL after missing a little over a month with an elbow strain. And they activated Jason Foley from the 60-day IL. He's missed the entire season after undergoing arthroscopic shoulder surgery. Spencer Bivens was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So in San Francisco, you got a couple guys that have closing experience. At least Foley does. Keaton Wynn has one save this year, but Jason Foley has plenty of closing experience. Do you see these guys factoring into the late innings in San Francisco, or is this still the Caleb Killian and Eric Miller show?
I think it's the Eric Miller show for sure. I don't know who's behind him at this moment. I think that's what's wide open right now. I mean, Keaton Wynn has not looked great since he's returned. We saw some glimpses of really, really great stuff from him in, like, what was it, April, May, and it just hasn't been the same since. He's been battling, I mean, elbow strain's can potentially linger for a while, so stuff's been down since he returned. He hasn't been pitching well. Stuff's not what it used to be, and it's not like he was a huge strikeout guy to begin with. I think he's been like 95, 96 with his fastball, which is probably not going to cut it. Might take some time. Maybe that's just, I don't know how long. I mean, the Giants really have nothing to play for at this point, so maybe they'll give him some length there to figure things out. But yeah, like behind, I mean, Eric Miller's been awesome in July. I mean, we've seen stints from Miller where he's really good, but July has been, the walks are down for him, the strikeouts are up. So, you know, outside of Miller, it's like Dylan Smith's been pretty good, but he's not that consistent yet. I think if you're like, if Miller's the closer, Sam Hankus is probably going to be your setup guy because he's the other only other lefty there. So, but yeah, I think Killian's kind of found his worked his way out of any sort of leverage role for the moment, and it's Miller, Hankus, and maybe Dylan Smith. I would throw a dart on Dylan Smith if, you know, the Giants are looking towards the future. That's a guy you want to see how he performs in that type of role.
Right. Right. It's been surprising to see Killian sort of removed from that role after being somewhat consistently in the ninth inning, but you've mentioned that he's just volatile the whole year. And the same thing can be said about Wynn, who's reliant on a splitter. But Miller, I mean, over the past few years might be the most consistent reliever on the Giants. And like you said, he's been hot recently. He just got a save on Monday night, his third of the year. So if the Giants are willing to trust him in that ninth inning, there's not too much competition. I mean, if JT Brubaker is a guy who's labeled as a setup man on roster resource, you're in a bad situation.
His stuff is terrible. I mean, he's the ERA is good, but like that's not going to last considering everything else that's going on in that profile. So,
right.
Yeah, it's really bleak. Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting guys who are hurt, but I don't know if they're going to help this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do wonder what the future of the Giants looks like. They're definitely going to be big sellers at the deadline. They're probably not going to be able to trade everybody that they want to trade.
Though, yeah, I mean, like unless you're giving up one of those big contracts,
I that's who I don't think they're going to be able to give up. But they definitely will get suitors for Robbie Ray and Tyler Mahle and anybody else that they want to let go of. But yeah, it'll be interesting how they move forward, what the design of the team is. And I've talked with Giants fans as a Giants fan myself about, you know, what do you do if you're Buster Posey? Because you have a stake in the team. You're the president of baseball operations. You're a part-time owner. Like you can't fire yourself. Right. And it's like you're sort of tainting your legacy at this point as like one of the most beloved players in franchise history. And now it's like, dude, what are you doing with this team? And you know, sort of have to blame the players a little bit, but they did the funky stuff with the manager. And it's really a disaster at this point. It sort of turned itself around for a little bit when they started having some interesting celebrations in the outfield after games. But then Logan Webb went on his tirade on Twitter and he had to delete his account. And it's a disaster. And the bullpen is sort of maybe the heart of it because it was a part of the team that they neglected.
Yeah, we knew going into the season this was going to be an issue, this bullpen. Mm-hmm. And it's been an issue. Wow.
Yeah, what a surprise. What a surprise. All right, let's go to the Pirates, who acquired Brandon Eichert via trade with the White Sox along with Jacob Gonzalez in exchange for reliever Jaden Woods and a 2026 competitive balance round A draft pick. Woods is pretty interesting. He's a 24-year-old lefty who at AA and AAA has pitched to a 5.01 ERA, but that comes with a 35% strikeout rate and a 10% walk rate. So high strikeout, southpaw, reliever. He will be in minor leagues for the White Sox, but I guess the biggest part for us to talk about, since we're not going to discuss the Gonzalez part of it, which is really the key factor in this trade, is Brandon Eichert here, who comes over from the White Sox after throwing a lot of innings this year, but they haven't really been spectacular. There's definitely potential, though, because he does have the ability to strike batters out.
Yeah, he's, I mean, I guess hypothetically, he's your third or fourth lefty when everyone's healthy there, and that's fine. That's a good spot. He still has options remaining. Mm-hmm. Doesn't throw hard, but yeah, he does have a little swing and miss in him. And I guess I guess without Evan Sisk, it allows them to have that extra lefty when you're asking one of your lefties in Montgomery or Soto to close out games. So they do need that third lefty and gives them some depth there. But yeah, obviously Jacob Gonzalez is the nice. Is the return there that is more exciting. But yeah, I mean, Jaden Woods is an interesting name, I guess, to keep an eye on. White Sox, again, they had a lot of lefties, so they were able to give up Eichert there. They have Murphy as well, Hudson and Newcomb. So, you know, they had, dealing from depth there and from a position of strength. So, but Woods is kind of an interesting, left-handed relief prospect. Probably not someone who's going to make an impact anytime soon.
I think he's 24, so maybe in a couple of years, but he's already up to AAA. And by soon, I assume you meant this year. So
yeah,
definitely definitely no Woods this year, but Woods next year in the White Sox bullpen could be interesting. The Pirates did not stop there, also acquiring Ron Marinaccio via a trade with the Padres in exchange for international bonus pool space. And while that's not super exciting nor interesting, I think it's more notable that Dennis Santana was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. He's not been spectacular this year. I think they DFA'd him in an effort to maybe ship him off if somebody's interested. But we saw last year, even when he was at his peak, no, there were no suitors. So I would be surprised if Dennis Santana finds a new ball club. But Ron Marinaccio did, and he'll enter in as a low leverage arm in the Pirates bullpen after being maybe like the last reliever in that Padres bullpen.
Yeah, that was 5 days ago. So I don't think anything's happened with Santana as far as I can tell.
No, I haven't seen anything.
So, but yeah, and fun, interesting fact I found on I think it was on Twitter. The last time Dennis Santana was DFA'd by the Yankees, it was also for Ron Marinaccio.
Whoa.
This is Ron Marinaccio was coming off the IL and they DFA'd Santana. So someone made the comment that like Santana must be sick of Ron Marinaccio just coming in and
stealing his job.
Yeah, he's making him jobless.
Yeah. Unemployed.
I mean, but it's like I the writing was on the wall, but at the same time, they were still kind of like trying to push Santana into leverage situations like up until like the last week before they gave up on him. So I mean, right.
That's one of those things where it always feels like a disconnect between the front office and the manager, where the manager sees a reliever and is like, that guy knows what he's doing, I'm going to trust him in high leverage. And the front office is like, that guy's barely on our team. I don't even want him on here next week because he's so borderline on our club. But yeah, you're right to say that he was trusted. I mean, 5 holds, 2 saves, not like last year's 12 holds and 16 saves, but 6.05 ERA suggests he should not be pitching any high leverage situations.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There is definitely a lack of right-handed depth in that bullpen. It's not like Marinaccio is making it any better.
Yeah.
So that's something if the Pirates are going to look to make some sort of run here, which I think they kind of have. They have the pieces to be an interesting playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
Go get a right-handed. Side. Yeah,
and
go get
rotation. A rotation.
Right, yeah, right. I mean, just go get a right-handed reliever. Like you don't have to make big moves, but you know, just like things like that, adding depth to the bullpen.
Yeah,
can go a long way potentially. So
yeah. I'm surprised they haven't utilized their relievers in the minors more, because we saw Brandon Bedois earlier this year and he was pretty interesting, but they also have like starters that are never going to be in this rotation because they have so many great starters. You got Antoine Kelly and Thomas Harrington, who had a brief call up last week, but they were right back down. Both of those guys were highly ranked prospects that I think are going to be labeled failed starters, but have
Antoine Kelly. Yeah, I mean, Antoine Kelly, I think he came up and had a couple of relief outings. And yeah, the stuff's legit. That is a guy that they should be transitioning. Maybe they already have. I haven't really. But that Kelly's definitely a guy they should be transitioning to a relief role, at least for this year. If you want to, you know, let him start next year, whatever. But for this season, Kelly could definitely help them out of that bullpen. He's better than, Johan Ramirez has really good stuff. They're not going to give up on him. But like Isaac Mattson. Yeah, I mean, even Majinski has been like, I don't know, well, like Wilbur Dotel. They're kind of interesting, but I mean, a guy like Kelly Bedois, if he can figure out his command, there's some guys, there's some pieces there, but I still think they need at least one arm outside of the organization to give them that boost, especially from obviously from the right side, because from the left side they're pretty good.
Yeah, Kelly's great. I mean, he's only thrown 4 1/3 innings, but PLV loves him. First in baseball in overall PLV with his small sample size. But it's a 97th percentile four-seamer, 98th percentile slider, and he throws 99 miles per hour. So, yeah.
Hunter Barco, too. I know he's a lefty, but like another guy who like...
That's what I'm saying. Why haven't they utilized these guys?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I mean... I think they're trying, but yeah, Kelly's definitely the guy for me that like his profile screams reliever anyway. Like, let's get that. Let's start that process. I think that's
Well, they definitely have the depth to work that out, and maybe Marinaccio and Isert establish themselves, but I don't really see that happening. Those are real low leverage guys that aren't super spectacular, but I'd love to see those guys make way for the sort of, I don't want to call them failed starters because they haven't really gotten the opportunity, but they are guys who just aren't going to get a chance considering how many options there are. And we saw Christian Curtis make his debut a couple of weeks ago. I wrote about him. He looked dope. He looked really sick. His stuff was awesome. And I think he's got real reliever risk as well. Not just because of the guys ahead of him.
Yeah.
But man, they are loaded in pitching. It is crazy. And to see the Pirates lineup come alive this year, it's really exciting for that whole ball club and for fans. It's just, we got to hope Bob Nutting can open the purse strings and spend some money. Spend just a little bit. Yeah. All right. From the Pirates to a team that does spend plenty of money, the Dodgers optioned Kyle Hurt to the minors and recalled Landon Knack in a corresponding move. They then optioned Knack to the minors in deference to Charlie Burns, who was selected from the minors. That one's somewhat notable because Kyle Hurt was a pretty significant part of this bullpen for a while. He was pitching really well, but now he's back in the minors and it wasn't to call up anybody that's integral to this bullpen. We also have a trade that the Dodgers succeeded in pulling off as they acquired Seth Halverson from the Rockies in exchange for reliever Nick Frasso and outfielder Landon Vidurek. And we have some news as well, as Edwin Diaz is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL tomorrow. We're recording on Tuesday, so Diaz will be back on Wednesday. He had surgery to remove loose bodies from his elbow in late April. So Kyle Hurt gone, Seth Halverson in. He's in the minor leagues, and Edwin Diaz due back on Wednesday.
Yeah. I mean, Halverson going there, like, that's, you know, you hate to see it.
Yeah.
That could be like, you know, Will Klein 2.0 for them. Probably not going to make any difference this year. The bullpen's too, like, yeah, once they get Diaz back, I'm like looking at it now and it's really tight once Diaz comes back. You know, even like, I mean, I don't know what Blake Treinen's been up to, but when he returns, like, I don't even know, does he have a roster spot if this bullpen's healthy? So, but yeah, Diaz returning tomorrow pushes everyone down, kind of trying to figure that out today, putting like the holds of us together and how do things shake out there. I mean, the thing, like, you know, Dave Roberts does love his veterans. It's you know, he would go to Blake Treinen no matter what. Like, it doesn't matter if he's the best pitcher, he would go to Blake Treinen in a big situation. Kind of seeing that with Evan Phillips so far since he's returned. He's been thrown right into a setup role, into a high leverage role over guys like Edgardo Henriquez or Klein or Jack Dreyer. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, Scott and Phillips are going to have significant roles behind Edwin Diaz for sure. After that, I don't know. Brock Stewart's been pitching really well, and he's obviously a candidate to get injured at any time. But
yeah,
when he's healthy, he's really good. A guy like Will Klein, he doesn't have options, so he's going to be on the roster, but he's probably destined for like some long relief role once everyone's healthy. I mean, Edgardo Henriquez has been so good, but like, I worry like him or Jack Dreyer might end up off the roster at some point just because of numbers.
That'd be crazy.
Which is crazy because they're both so good. And yeah, I don't, the Dodgers. So they're going to have a really good AAA bullpen as well. I mean, Ben Kasperius is working his way back. There's other guys who,
oh yeah,
even like you mentioned Landon Knack. Landon Knack looked pretty good in his, I think he had at least one outing he looked really good in as a reliever. It's just like, it's silly. It doesn't really matter the names at this point. It's just like, you're a Dodgers reliever. Yeah, you have good stuff. We know.
Right.
That's just kind of,
I mean, that's why they got Halverson. He throws 100 and I said he's in the minors. He's currently on the injured list recovering from shoulder inflammation. So even he could return at any moment and just immediately supplement this Dodgers bullpen. But I think the biggest question that comes with the return of Diaz is, how does everything shake out? I think the Dodgers are going to want to take it easy on Diaz. They're locked into the postseason. I am looking at Fangraphs right now, 100% probability to make the playoffs right now. So they don't have to worry about that. I think they could bench everybody and still make the postseason. Just, they could swap their AAA roster with their major league roster and still it'd make
the postseason. Probably be .500 team.
Yeah. So I guess the question is, is it still worth rostering Tanner Scott in standard leagues? Because will he split opportunities with Diaz? Is this going to be a platoon situation? Are they going to sort of limit Diaz where he's not going to pitch on back-to-back days, allowing Scott to get a handful of save opportunities because the Dodgers win so often? Or is it just going to be, all right, Edwin, like full reins off, like go wild, like Tanner Scott's no longer relevant anymore. He's just another Alex Vesia.
I think it depends. It definitely depends on your league and also what you need, what you're looking for. Like if you're okay with missing out on saves, but you do want like if Scott's like your third reliever, you're looking for some ratio help, K's and an occasional save here and there or an occasional win, then I would definitely like Scott's probably a top 20, 25 reliever in save leagues like that. If that's what you're looking for. If you desperately need saves though, then you're probably dropping Scott for some, Eric Miller or Hogan Harris and hoping to get some saves from those types moving forward, which is a tough transition. It's a tough move. But like if you're desperately need that roster spot of Tanner Scott to get you saves, then yeah, you probably have to drop him. I think Diaz isn't going to get every save. He's probably going to get at least 70%, 75% though. And so Scott the Dodgers win a ton of games, but they don't always have, save opportunities in bunches.
Because they win by so much.
Right. So, I don't know. It really depends on your, points leagues. Like Scott's still a nice option. And if you don't care about saves that much, if you're in a head to head and you just want the rate, like I have them in our staff league head to head, weekly head to head cats league, I'm probably going to hang on to them for a little while, at least, I have other save options and he'll at least hopefully stabilize ratios, get some strikeouts and the occasional winner save. So still a good reliever to have and roster. But yeah, if you're desperate for saves, you're probably going to move on.
All right, let's move to the Braves bullpen. They had one move that just sort of cascaded into a bunch of other moves that didn't really mean much. I was surprised to see James Karinchak option to the minors. He was pitching very well, 1.86 ERA through 9 2/3 innings. But when you look at the underlying metrics, I think the Braves were smart to sort of move to somebody else. He was not striking out a bunch of batters, not getting a bunch of whiffs. He's walking everybody. That's his sort of MO. And the ERA estimator suggested that Karinchak was due for plenty of regression as the season wore on. So I guess that was a safe move there. But in a corresponding move, they recalled Owen Murphy from the minors, and then they optioned him to the minors in exchange for Eliezer Hernandez. You remember him? He was a starter for the Marlins a few years ago. Mm. He was recalled from the minors and then subsequently designated for assignment so Connor Thomas could get recalled from the minors. Then they optioned Connor Thomas to the minors and then selected the contract of Eliezer Hernandez. Remember Eliezer Hernandez? We just talked about him 2 seconds ago. Yeah, so he's back on the roster. I don't think any of this is fantasy relevant, but was just surprised that Karinchak sent down. But that's sort of like, who was that guy that was super lucky for the Braves last year that we talked about a bunch?
Jesse Chavez, right?
No. The young guy.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, we've already forgotten.
Hernandez too. Yeah.
Yeah, Daysbell Hernandez.
Daysbell. Yeah.
That, it's sort of a situation like that where the Braves are like, yeah, this guy's got good surface metrics, but that doesn't mean he's a good pitcher.
Yeah, and they're ahead of the curve there more often than not. But yeah, there's still. They have a pretty tight, top five or six guys right now in that bullpen, but trying to find those last two bullpen spots with Suarez out. And it sounds like Suarez is going to be out for a longer, maybe throughout all of August as well. So wouldn't be surprised. I mean, every team's in the market for relievers at the deadline. So maybe the Braves are trying to find some depth there over the next week. But like none of these guys, unless one of those starters, those prospect starters, like has like a similar impact as like Didier Fuentes has been having, where they truly transition to a reliever and their stuff, ticks up a little bit. Like maybe Owen Murphy, that's kind of an interesting great fastball with him. Yeah. So especially if you imagine if that plays up a little bit, the velo comes up a little bit in the bullpen, that could be a guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just the bottom part of the bullpen and not too worried about it. But yeah, the top half, I mean, Fuentes and Dylan Dodd have been, awesome for them, quietly, sneakily, just, you know, keeping that bullpen together this year.
Yeah, and both of those guys, like you said, are failed starters. So, well, Fuentes hasn't really gotten the chance yet, but Dodd was not great, but he's looked amazing as a reliever. So Braves are sort of in that same boat with the Pirates, where they have focused more on pitching in their drafts, and maybe the way to go nowadays. I think when we talked about, like, in the 2010s, when the Cubs and the Astros were super focused on building a really great position player core, and then they would supplement that by going and acquiring established pitchers, that was seemed to be the thing that worked back in the day. But now, with pitchers being so volatile, not only in their performance, but also in their injury susceptibility, it's almost better to say, you know, we can find some platoons, we can go get some established hitters, and just have an endless stream of pitchers coming up, and some establish themselves as starters and some become relievers. And, you know, the guys who don't establish themselves as starters, they might even be like really great relievers. So that seems to be the way to go nowadays. And I think if I were sort of building like an MLB The Show franchise, that's, I think, how I'd focus. It seems like those types of builds are a lot more sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, the Braves have the luxury of, like, you know, a lot of their position players are already under contract for a while, and, like, you know, but, you know, that works for, I do think that is kind of the way to go in today's game, is if you can spend money, you spend the money on the bats, and then you just have a stream of pitching come up, and you just, if when they get hurt, you have a guy behind him who's ready to, you know, fill in. So
they're better than the Red Sox anyway.
The Red Sox have been doing the same thing.
They've really turned their season around.
They
have turned their season around, and they had so much pitching, they were able to trade one of them for Curtis Mead, which he just landed on the IL with a fractured hand, so that did not go well. let's stick in the AL East, though. We'll talk about the Orioles, who made their own trade as they acquired Cam Sanders from the Pirates in exchange for cash considerations. He was on the active roster for a few days, and then he was optioned to the minors, as Nick Rickett was optioned to the minors when Cam Sanders was acquired. So sort of a moot trade at this point, but the Pirates are getting rid of lefties and acquiring others, while the Orioles are supplementing a bullpen that is not as great as it was earlier in the season. And it feels like the Orioles are pretty far from playoff contention at this point. So I'm curious what they do in the next week.
That is a team. Yeah. I mean, the last wild card spot in the AL is kind of, it really is wide open. That's why the Tigers are having such a hard time, like, making what do they do? They're within reach of that last wild card. And same with the Orioles. The Orioles are ahead of them. So, I mean, you just got to kind of, it's going to be interesting to see which teams decide that their rosters are so far away from competing that they do move, and that might be the Orioles, or they, I don't know. It's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, but I don't think the Colonel Sanders or Cam Sanders, I always want to call him Colonel Sanders. The Cam Sanders move is going to really change anything. So, but the Orioles, we'll get to that if we have, you know, time to talk about some trade names being mentioned in trades. The Orioles could have a very interesting group of relievers on the market if they decided to sell. So pretty much that whole bullpen could be, I could see being available for the right price.
It seems like the smart thing to do. They got a lot of impending free agents, and I feel like it's best to capitalize on that. I feel the same thing about the Skubal situation, where it's like, if you don't make the playoffs, you're going to feel terrible that you didn't trade him. It's like the Shohei Ohtani trade. You're right. And they're still trying to recover from that. I mean, they may never. So I think just go for it. Go for the trade. It's better for the future. But I guess with the lockout impending, it's sort of difficult to say, you know, we want to build for the future. What future the owners might say.
True.
All right, let's move to the Brewers, who made a trade that has already become obsolete, but I felt it was worth to talk about. Lance McCullers Jr. was traded by the Astros, along with Colton Gordon, to the Brewers in exchange for outfielder Jaden Fielder. And yes, that is Prince Fielder's son, and cash considerations. McCullers entered the Brewers on the 15-day IL, but he was ultimately activated. He missed a couple of months with shoulder inflammation. I think he pitched two games and then was designated for assignment and subsequently released. Jared Koenig was also optioned to the minors in a corresponding move to McCullers acquisition. That it was an interesting trade. I thought maybe McCullers could pull things off as a reliever. He's always been a guy that's like, yeah, you don't have the stuff to be a starter anymore. So maybe a smart team will turn him into a legit reliever just because his stuff moves so crazy. But if the Brewers gave up on him that quickly and now he's a free agent, I don't know if there is a team that's going to be able to figure out McCullers.
Yeah, someone probably takes a chance on him. I mean, he's younger than you think too. He's been around for so long and just, but yeah, there's nothing really, there's no fastball there. I don't know, probably needs a longer look in the bullpen to see if he can get some sort of velocity bump. But yeah, it's an interesting trade. I thought Colton Gordon, at least at one point, was kind of an interesting prospect maybe as well. But yeah, I mean, just to give up on McCullers that quickly is definitely a choice, but Brewers will be fine. They always find ways. They'll find someone to be a demon out of their bullpen as like their seventh guy in that bullpen. So, yeah, they'll be okay.
Yeah, I think you're right to say that Colton Gordon was probably who the Brewers were interested in, and they were like, "Oh, we'll take Lance McCullers off your hand," and now he is a free agent, and somebody else will have to figure out what they can do with him. Maybe he can go like the Matt Whistler route, where he's just only throwing sweepers.
Just until his arm falls off. I mean, that might be it. That might be the way to go. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he already has trouble staying healthy. So maybe that's the way to go. Just push it to the limit with the sweepers. Yeah. Speaking of the Astros, after they traded Lance McCullers Jr., they activated Bennett Sousa from the 60-day IL. He missed about almost 3 months with elbow inflammation. Brian King was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move, and then they brought him back. And I forget what the corresponding move was, probably some starter, but so with Sousa back and Brian King back, there's plenty of lefties there to support Josh Hader and Steven Okert. I don't think this is going to shake things up, but I just thought it was surprising to see Brian King go down for even just a couple of days after he was, you know, maybe the last guy sort of keeping this bullpen from absolutely falling apart before Josh Hader returned.
Yeah, I mean, King had been looking really good. And then at some point in July, you know, the velo kind of started trending downward and he started getting, you know, hit pretty hard. And Okert has been out pitching him. And even, you know, Bennett Sousa, since he's returned, has looked much better. The first stint with Sousa, he did not look great. But since returning, he's only been, I think, three games, but he's looked more like his 2025 self. So that's, he's already got three holds too, I think, in all three games since he returned. So he's, you know, right back into 2025 form, which is a big get for the Astros, because he was really an underrated reliever last year. He was great for them. Kind of lost behind Brian King, who King got a lot of the holds, but Sousa pitched better than him. I think most of the year. So hopefully Sousa can start reaping those rewards and getting some holds like it looks like he has been. But again, yeah, this bullpen is still has a lefty problem, and there's still waiting for some righty in this bullpen that like is reliable. You know, Abreu's been pitching better lately, but he's still not like the Brian Abreu of old. I mean, outside of that, it's a crapshoot as to which righty in this bullpen can actually be a factor for them. Do they buy? Do they sell at the deadline? That's another thing. So
it sounds like they're buying. I mean, it's TBD. Really close in the AL West right now.
Yeah, they probably should be. I mean, that's the thing, is you can make a case for almost any AL team to buy at this point. We'll see. I mean, they don't really have a ton to sell anyway, I don't know what Abreu would even get you at the deadline. Or Hader at this point. I mean, Hader would probably get you a nice return, but I don't know, that's complicated with that contract.
Right. All right. The last team we'll talk about before we take a break is the Tampa Bay Rays. They activated Steven Matz from the 15-day IL after he missed a month with an ankle sprain. Chris Roycroft was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Mats is going to be a long reliever, most likely. They don't really have one of those right now in the Rays bullpen, and I don't really see him becoming one of the top lefties anyway with Garrett Clevenger pitching like he should again, and Cam Boozer having a spectacular season quietly.
Yeah, I know. Boozer's been awesome. I mean, Cole Sulzer's been pitching better lately. Yeah, I just don't see – like, I don't think Mats has a – even with, you know – maybe a need for another lefty there. You know, Sulzer's a big changeup guy to begin with. You know, so that's kind of like another lefty. So with Boozer, sure. Clevenger, and Sulzer, I don't think Mats factors in too much to anything significant. So, yeah, that was weird offseason for the Rays. I feel like they made some bad moves altogether, but here they are and playing well and, like,
yeah.
You know, Mats, that whole the trade with the Pirates didn't really seem to do much for them. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, working out for them. I guess they've been lucky to have Junior Cameron Arrows take a step forward, and that offense has really come together. And then Griffin Jack successfully transitioning from the bullpen to the rotation, and Nick Martinez just going on the crazy hot streak and having it last all season, I think, has been huge for them. So, I don't think you're going to look at the bullpen and say, oh, this is the reason why they've done so well this year. But seeing Brian Baker, I mean, last year's trade deadline definitely paying dividends.
Yeah, right. That's an underrated move from last year that kind of seemed out of nowhere. And look at how important that move's been this year. Same with, I mean, Griffin Jacks, too. It's he pitched well again tonight. So, I mean, Rays are going to make – they're going to win trades, they're going to lose trades, but they always end up being a winning team at the end of the day, it seems like. So
I like the Sam Miller quote. Oh, I love this trade for the Rays. Who did they get and who did they trade away?
Yeah, right.
It's a classic. All right, next we'll talk about the injuries from the past couple of weeks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitchers. Let's talk about some injuries, starting with the Cubs, who initially activated Phil Maton from the 15-day IL after missing a month with knee tendonitis. Jake Woodford was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. But then just 1 week later, and Phil Maton is back on the 15-day IL with knee tendonitis. The Cubs also designated Drew Pomeranz for assignment. So, I mean, Maton just obviously can't stay healthy. I'd be surprised if he's back anytime soon, considering the recurring nature of that injury. But this bullpen cannot catch a break, and it's surprising to see them let go of Pomeranz amid a bullpen that just has not been reliable this year.
Yeah, I think it feels like there is a spot for Pomeranz. Even, you know, they have kind of figured out some things with, you know, Webb and Thornton and Teelbar, Rolison, Allwell, Ferguson. They've all been pitching well recently. And those are names that, you know, no one really was thinking of at the beginning of the season. Maybe Teelbar, but, like, you know, these guys are all, you know, someone they picked off of waivers or signed for, like, a league minimum. So, I mean, they're once again making it work with little resources, I suppose. But yeah, Pomeranz probably, I figured that he would have get a little bit more of a, you know, a chance there, but I don't know, it is what it is. So Paul Sewald, come on, man.
He's giving up another home run.
Yeah, he's just has been giving up home runs way too much this year. Speaking of the Rays losing a trade to Pittsburgh, Brandon Lowe hit the home run. But Ryan Rolison has been really good, and Teelbar has been pitching better. So they have two lefties there in Chicago. But yeah, it's still, again, the Cubs, even with Palencia potentially coming back, they still should be making a move for a reliever.
When is he due back, though? Because I just checked the news on him, and it's like he's scheduled to throw an up and down bullpen session today.
Yeah.
It's not very promising.
I think they're pushing it back maybe in August, you know, early September.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jacob Webb probably has a nice month unless they make a significant addition. I mean, Jacob Webb could be the closer there for the next couple weeks to a month.
He hasn't the Cubs just have not had save opportunities this year.
For anyone.
I know. Yeah, you thought, okay, maybe Palencia's gone now. They'll start flowing. But even still, I mean, we do the predictions in the preseason, like who's going to lead this team in saves. And Trent Thornton has as many saves as Daniel Palencia. And it's not like Palencia didn't, like, he's been injured for a while, but it's not like he didn't have a time to record saves. It's, I don't know,
19 games from your closer and he only has three saves. That is,
I know,
that is weird. That is not normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a weird season from the Cubs bullpen, and they are just ultra injured. And you know who else is ultra injured, and it's been maybe the final season of his career, is Chris Martin, who landed on the 15-day IL again. It was like the fourth or fifth time this year already. This time it's a shoulder impingement. Emiliano Teodo was recalled from the minors and then subsequently optioned to the minors so that Jose Corniel could be recalled from the minors. Then Corniel himself landed on the 15-day IL with elbow discomfort, and Marco Gonzalez was selected from the minors. There's another, remember this guy. And one more injury for the Rangers is Jacob Junis was actually activated from the 15-day IL. He missed a couple of weeks with a hip impingement, and Gavin Collier was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So ultimately, we have Martin to the IL, Corniel to the IL, and Marco Gonzalez back in the majors, and Jacob Junis returning from the IL.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I don't know why Martin, I don't know. And I think he's on a rehab assignment already.
Seawall just gave up another.
Seawall just gave up another home run.
To blow the save?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yikes.
Home runs are an issue for my guy. Yeah. Wow. But yeah, I mean, Chris Martin, I just don't, it's just not working this year. And I don't know. It's on the IL, off the IL, rehab. It just seems like a lot. I mean, good for him, like still grinding and going through all these rehab assignments and trying to get back. But like, it's just, 16 games, an ERA of 9. I don't know. I just don't know if there's anything really left there. Marco Gonzalez, I did not think I would see that name at all this year, but here we are. This team desperately needs bullpen help, and it does sound like that is a priority for them, at least. Like, they are gonna, like, they need somebody in front of Jacob Latz. And I mean, Jacob Junis has been fine. It's a good piece, but like, you need one or two other guys.
That's a guy in the postseason where like the ratios look good during the regular season. You get in the postseason, you're like, how is this guy any good?
That's not an October guy. Yeah.
No, because he's not missing bats. He's getting blown up is what's going to happen. Yeah.
So, yeah, they need, like, I mean, I've seen Luke Weaver linked to them, which would be an interesting one. But yeah, I mean, they need to make some additions. Jacob Latz has been killing it. And outside of that, it's, just Peyton Gray looks kind of good, but again, not a guy I want to trust in the eighth inning of an October playoff game.
Right.
Like, that's, maybe the sixth inning when you're up 5 or down 4 in a playoff game. What I mean? Like, that's,
they don't have anybody like that. They need like 3 guys.
Yeah, realistically.
To support Latz.
Or a starter turn reliever, something like that. Yeah. But I don't even know who that starter would be at this point.
Yeah. I mean, Teodo's got the stuff, but they don't want to trust him. Yeah. I mean, Kumar Rocker's finally figuring things out. So I don't see that happening either. Jack Leiter's done for the season. I mean, yeah, it's not looking great for this bullpen. I wouldn't be surprised if they ultimately miss the playoffs just as things get a little bit more competitive down the stretch. So we'll see. Hopefully that's not the case. You did mention Paul Sewald. We're not talking about the Diamondbacks yet, but I don't even think they had many significant moves, but his ERA is now 5.26. He finally gotten out. So with an ERA over 5, do you predict the Diamondbacks sort of switching it up? Sewald's been the closer all year, 24 saves, and his numbers are great other than the home runs. He just cannot keep the ball in the yard. And do you think they go to somebody else? And if so, who?
Juan Morello's been pitching better lately. They're starting to trust him again. So that might be the guy I would suggest. And he's coming in now. I mean, Loaisiga has been another guy they've been trusting lately. I think Brandon Garcia is a lefty. I mean, yeah, it was weird how they got to Sewald here. Ginkel would be a nightmare too. Ginkel's been pretty good lately, but I would trust Loaisiga or Morello.
Yeah.
Brandon Garcia is awesome, but as the only lefty in that bullpen, I don't think that they can kind of sacrifice him into the ninth inning guy. So I'd be inclined to say Murillo or Loaiza, but you know, Murillo is going to have more of a swing and miss streak to him. At least Loaiza is still not missing bats, but he's been pitching well. You know, stuff's still there.
All right. Well, that's fair. I think that's what I would have expected. Juan Murillo, probably the top option if Seawald starts to lose save opportunities. Let's go to the Marlins, who sent William Kempner to the 15-day IL with a sprained elbow. Dax Fulton was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And the Marlins had a stacked injured list bullpen prior to activating John King from the 15-day IL. He missed a couple of weeks with an ankle sprain. Zach Brzezicki was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. But still, it's like all of the exciting Marlins relievers that we are hoping are all healthy next year and make the Marlins one of the best relief corps in baseball. They're all injured right now. Bender, Kempner, Eknis, Narvi, Henriquez. It's like that's a group of dope names, and they're all gone. Luckily, the Marlins bullpen has kept things together, even with a Pete Fairbanks with a 7 ERA. Like Michael Peterson's just been awesome.
Yeah, Peterson's been huge for them. I mean, he's been kind of holding them together. But yeah, like you said, I mean, there's that whole Bender, Eknis, Henriquez, Kempner, Nardi is such a nasty bullpen that's just all on the IL right now. So again, another team who like kind of has a chance at the postseason. I don't know how many of those guys are actually going to be available for them in October, but they could potentially have a deep bullpen come October if they keep this group together and get healthy. But yeah, Kempner was pitching well. But yeah, that's another one that is, between him and Eknis, I would have thought one of them would kind of, you know, be on the roster break in the midst of a breakout right now, but both of them are hurt. So yeah, that'll have to wait.
All right. Sticking in the NL East, Brad Keller was placed on the 15-day IL with a torn UCL, and he was subsequently transferred to the 60-day IL as Keller will undergo surgery and miss the remainder of the season. I guess the Phillies just can't have more than one B Keller on the roster. They had Brian Keller earlier.
And they're not related.
No.
That's so weird. Yeah,
very weird. Seth Johnson was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move, but sort of sucks. I mean, Brad Keller was a big offseason signing. He's now likely to miss, I mean, obviously all this season and probably most of if not all of next year, which huge blow. But hey, that means your boy, Jonathan Bolin, can step up and be one of the top relievers in that Phillies bullpen alongside Orion Kerkering as the top two setup options behind closer Yoan Duran.
Yeah, I mean, Bolin is the only guy I really trust right now. Kerkering has not been pitching well. Alvarado has been very hit or miss, more miss than hit. Of Alvarado, or he's been getting hit more, so I don't know if that works that way.
I'm like, you sort of want more missed than hit if you're a pitcher.
it's true. So yeah, that obviously they're gonna make a splat. I mean, it depends, it's all gonna come down to who's really available at the deadline, but I would imagine of the like top three, like the three biggest relievers on the move, I'd imagine the Phillies get one of them, if that makes any sense. Like that's definitely a need for this team. With even if Keller was healthy, I still feel like they needed some bullpen help. So, I mean, I feel good about Bolin and Duran, and then after that, it's really, really dicey. So, I mean, even with Keller, again, Keller wasn't even pitching well to begin with. So, this obviously hurts them from a depth perspective, but they still needed help either way.
Let's move to the St. Louis Cardinals, who placed Jojo Romero on the 15-day IL as he had appendicitis. He probably had to get his appendix removed. Scott Blewett was selected from the minors in a corresponding move, subsequently designated for assignment, and then traded to the A's in exchange for cash considerations. Blewett is one of the most unfortunate names for a relief pitcher, but regardless, we're more focused on Romero's placement on the IL, as it really is going to test the fortitude of Justin Brule as the only lefty reliever in the Cardinals bullpen.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, another team where it's like, what's the game plan here at the deadline? It's they're starting to kind of fall back to normal. Maybe they do end up selling because this team's just not ready yet. There's a fun core there, but like the bullpen, if they were to make a significant playoff run, they need, you know, real reinforcements on that, in that bullpen, because O'Brien has been really, I mean, O'Brien's been terrible since like May. I mean, it's not, there's no way to sugarcoat it. It's just O'Brien hasn't been good. He's still hanging on to that closer role because there's really no other options there. And Soriano has been pitching better than expected, but that's not really a closer. Same with Ryan Stanek's not a guy you want in the ninth inning. We've seen that. So yeah, this bullpen, even, I mean, I would imagine Romero probably gets traded at this point. I think it's definitely shaping up like a seller's market. Cardinals probably should just sell. And you know, O'Brien, if someone's going to bite on O'Brien, being an all-star and having, you know, the numbers kind of look good from a certain right. perspective. So if you can sell him to someone, then I think you do that too. So this might be a very different looking bullpen in a week. Mm-hmm. I guess I'd imagine this week, how the Cardinals play this week is going to have a big, you know, it's going to have a big, you know, and they got blown out today. So I don't think things are trending the right way so far.
Yeah. And I think people would be surprised to hear that a team would be shopping a guy like Riley O'Brien. They're like, well, he has only, you know, 1.129 service time, according to Fangraphs, meaning he's got one full year of service time. He's not a free agent until 2031, but he's 32 right now, or he's 31 right now. He will be 32 next year.
He's an injury history.
Right. Yeah, this is not like a young guy who's finally broken out. This is the type of guy that you want to deal where you can say, well, look at all the control you get of a guy who's going to be in his mid 30s, like most of the time that you have him. So I don't know. I think he's the right guy to try to trade, but I think the Cardinals would be smart to deal at this deadline. As you mentioned, it is a seller's market. One team that has already taken advantage of that seller's market is the Colorado Rockies. We mentioned they traded Seth Haverson. They also placed Jeff Criswell on the 15-day IL with a shoulder strain, and we'll move on to the A's, who placed Justin Sterner on the 15-day IL with knee chondromalacia. And you're lucky. I looked this up when this occurred a couple weeks ago. I did my research to, you know, I'm going to be a doctor someday, I guess. No, I'm joking. it's when the cartilage underneath the kneecap starts to break away from the kneecap. And so that's cartilage is what keeps the bone attached to the muscles. So that it's sort of like, it sounds a lot worse than it is, but it's not that bad. And so I think Sterner's going to be back at some point this year. Jeff Hartlib was selected from the minors in a corresponding move, designated for assignment so that Scott Blewett could pitch for the A's. Like I mentioned, he was traded by the Cardinals to the A's. And then lastly, one more injury for the A's. Mark Leiter Jr. was placed on the 15-day IL with a hip impingement, and it was determined to be so severe that he will require season-ending surgery. So Mark Leiter Jr. out for the rest of the year. Fortunately, the A's had made a trade about a month back where they acquired Hayden Younger from the Blue Jays, and he was recalled to the minors in a corresponding move. So a lot of shifting pieces here in this A's bullpen, and the more that it shifts, the more ugly it looks.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it's like I'm looking at Hogan Harris and Elvis Alvarado, and I don't really care about anything else there. It's just noise. Younger, Hartley, blew it. I mean, Leiter Jr., that injury kind of stinks for them. They probably could have gotten something for him at the deadline. But yeah, I mean, hopefully, I mean, Sterner, there's hope for Sterner. I'm not like totally out on him yet, but we need to. He's like a Rockies reliever where like a Juan Mejia, it's like you get like three good weeks and then you just get one horrible week that it's just like, why is this guy on my roster?
Yeah.
And then it's like three more good weeks and then another just like eight earned run week. And it's like, what am I? Yeah. It's like, just the stuff's there for Sterner. There's just no consistency yet from him. The chondromalacia. I did my wife's a physical therapist, and I asked her, I kind of stumped her with this one. I think it's because I pronounced it wrong, it's the same.
She's like Malaysia, the country.
Yeah, exactly. Like, But yeah, like you said, it's not as, it sounds kind of weird, but it's not, it's not terribly scary. Yeah.
It reminded me of, I have a costochondritis, which is like the same thing, but in your chest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I heard, I saw the chondro part of it, and I was like, the prefix there. And I was like, oh, I think I know what that is. So it, it seems like he's got like dull pain in his knee every once in a while. And I don't think it's life changing, but I think Sterner's ultimately going to be fine. It's like, it's not something you get surgery for. It's sort of just a rest and rehab thing. So maybe with the A season where it's at, they don't return Sterner. I mean, I don't see really any point in doing that, but you know, it's nothing too crazy. Let's go to the Nationals. Who, I mean, they got to be buying at this deadline, because that offense is awesome and the pitching staff, rotation and bullpen are just terrible. I can use much stronger words. I won't. But the Nationals placed PJ Poulin on the 15-day IL with a flexor strain. They brought Matt Crook back on a major league contract after he was designated for assignment and released. They also designated my boy Justin Lawrence for assignment, and he was outrighted to the minors. So I don't know, his career might be over at this point. And Gus Varland was recalled from the minors as well. So Varland back to the majors.
Max Granick's there, too. Max Cranick from last,
Talk about him? Was he on the Pirates?
I don't know. Yeah, no, right? He was on the Pirates, but then he kind of had a bit of a breakout with the Mets last year before getting hurt. But yeah, I mean, he doesn't look that good right now. None of these guys really look good. It's a mess. It's still a mess. I'm hoping Gus Varland, I don't know what Gus Varland's been doing at AAA, but hopefully.
I got you.
Maybe there's some hope there, because that was the only other guy. I will say this about the Nationals: Clayton Beter had back-to-back traditional save chances this weekend. Mm-hmm. Like ninth and tenth saves of the season in like a traditional starting the ninth inning, finishing the ninth inning with a lead, which is maybe the first time we've actually seen that from him in back-to-back outings. So hey, maybe they're. I mean, Beter is still very volatile. The command is terrible, but I mean, I just want some sort of consistency. And if they're going to give him, they're going to give him the save chances, then that at least puts him back on the radar in save leagues.
Right. Gus Varland at AAA, 3.12 ERA in 8 2/3 innings with a 38% strikeout rate and 11% walk rate.
Yeah. Not bad. A lot of game, and that's at AAA. That's like a standard line. I don't know. It's a good line, but like AAA, that doesn't do much for me. But
small sample. We'll see. Yeah, I don't think the outlook changes on Gus Varland based on how he performed in the minor leagues. Let's talk about the Diamondbacks. They placed Dre Jameson on the 15-day IL with hip inflammation and recalled Gerardo Carrillo from the minors in a corresponding move. And I think since we already talked about Paul Sewald, we can move right along. We'll go to the Guardians bullpen, who placed Sean Armstrong on the 15-day IL with a calf strain. Will Dion was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, and they also activated Tim Herron from the 15-day IL after he missed a couple of weeks with an elbow contusion. I am interested in Will Dion. I hope he gets an opportunity. He's been up and down this year, but as a lefty, he gets plenty of strikeouts, and he's had some really great minor league numbers since the Guardians gave up on him as a starter this year at AAA, 3.62 ERA, but a 35% strikeout rate and a sub 5% walk rate. That's a 30% strikeout minus walk rate for Will Dion. That's very interesting, and he's doing that from the left side. So him paired with Eric Sabrowski seems pretty lethal if both of those guys are pitching at the top of their game.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Tim Herron has his moments too.
Sure.
I think Dion's probably, he does have a bit of, I think he's got like a legit four pitch mix, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Could be more of a bulk guy, or you know, a long reliever, or you know, maybe kind of goes the way of like Joey Cantillo, or you know, works out of the bullpen, maybe transitions into a starter again at some point. I don't know if that's going to work out, but definitely an interesting arm.
Tosser like Cantillo.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting arm. It's, you know, Sabrowski hasn't exactly been, you know, dominating since he returned, and Tim Herron just came back. So there could be an opportunity there for Dion to work his way into being the top lefty by the end of the year. It would take a lot, but it's possible.
It's the same exact pitch mix as Cantillo. It's four-seamer, curveball, changeup, cutter. So,
yeah,
I don't know. He's got the four-seamer does have 19 inches of IVB, but he's just got 6.2 feet of extension. So when you're throwing 91.5, it's not that great, but I don't know. Curveball, 90th percentile PLV, and the changeup gets a lot of whiffs. So maybe there's potential there. But I think you're right to say that.
He's a little guy. Like a lot of the guys in this bullpen and this pitching staff in general, they like the Guardians like these like 6'4", 6'5" guys, and Dion's just like, I think he's 5'10". Yeah, he's, mm-hmm. So that's that extension issue. Yeah. Interesting. I get it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, we'll stick in the AL Central and talk about the Twins, who activated Cole Sands from the 15-day IL after he missed a couple of months with a forearm strain. And then 3 days later, they placed him back on the 15-day IL with an elbow strain. I think at this point, it's safe to say that Cole Sands' season's probably done if he just cannot shake this elbow injury after multiple months. It's probably not looking too great for him. I think surgery is probably on the horizon. Jack Anderson was optioned to the minors when Sands was activated and then recalled from the minors when he was placed back on the IL. The Twins also supplemented their bullpen in a trade right after we recorded our last podcast. They acquired Tommy Nance in a trade from the Blue Jays in exchange for utility man Ryan Sprock and international bonus pool space. They also optioned the boy Woosuk Go to the minors. Jack Anderson was involved in that as well. He's up and down and up and down, but Woosuk Go's gone. But hey, they got Tommy Nance in this bullpen, and he's been thrust right into high leverage situations behind Yoandrés Gómez and Andrew Morris.
Yeah, Nance is a solid arm and kind of repetitive in Toronto, so I get this move for both sides. I mean, between, like you said, after those two, it's really Nance and trying to scrape whatever's left of Taylor Rogers at this point. This is kind of how the Twins have been piecing it together. So, yeah, not sure I would love to have Nance in holds leagues, but someone to keep an eye on, just, you know, because their opportunity is there.
All right, and lastly, we have the Kansas City Royals, who placed Beck Way on the 15-day IL with back spasms. They recalled Easton McGee from the minors in a corresponding move. He was acquired via trade from the Brewers in exchange for cash considerations, and the Royals also acquired Nate Pearson via trade from the Astros in exchange for minor league reliever Max Martin, who is pitching at high A right now. So he's few years away, but Nate Pearson and Easton McGee additions to a Royals bullpen that not been great this year is probably definitely going to trade anybody that they can. But you know, there's always been potential in Pearson's arm. I was excited for him when he was a prospect for the Blue Jays back in the day.
Might as well take a flyer on him. The stuff has looked fine for him this year. Not you know, the best he's looked, but the Royals trying to get any sort of, you know, talent, arm talent there, I guess that's it's worth a shot. I feel like Easton McGee's been on like every team. I feel like he's been everywhere. But yeah, I mean, an interesting thing with the Royals, you know, trying to figure out still what their closer situation is. And, you know, tonight they have a one run lead. They went to Steven Cruz in the eighth, and Alex Lang is coming in for the ninth. So I guess Lang is still, you know, the 1A closer option for them at the moment, but it could change in the next week. If, you know, maybe they're trying to pump up Lang's value as much as they can and deal him. He still has like two or three years of control left. So I don't know. Maybe they see him as a potential future bullpen piece that they can rely on. I don't know why they would, but that could be it. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, he like barely pitched the last 2 years, and they're like, but he pitched a lot this year. Yeah, I don't really see it. I feel like they should be capitalizing and trading on anybody that they can. The future
mismanagement of that bullpen this year needs to be studied, like in the future.
Matt Quatraro needs to be studied. His brain needs to be submitted to doctors for the betterment of society. But regardless, that's all the transactions and injuries from the past couple of weeks. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the relievers that could be traded at the deadline across the next week. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, discussing some relievers who could be traded at the deadline, which is upcoming. We're 6 days away from it right now. There are lots of names going around. I mean, some big ones, and most of them I'm like, I don't really see how that's going to happen. I don't know who's going to pay up, or that I don't even see these teams sort of wanting to give up these players. But let's start with the Padres. I mean, they have a loaded bullpen. They can definitely afford to give up a couple guys, but they're shopping Mason Miller and Adrian Morejon, which, you know, fair enough. They are going to receive a ton of prospects if they decide to trade one of those guys. But they just acquired Mason Miller. They've had him for like a year and a half. And Adrian Morihone was an all-star last year. He's been incredible this year. To sort of take those guys out of that bullpen would sort of, I don't know, kill that bullpen for the next couple of years. I don't really see how they would do that, nor do I see how a team is going to pay up enough to acquire either of those guys.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, Morihone's a free agent at the end of the year.
Already? Wow. I think he's only 27. I guess he debuted so young at 20. He did, okay. Yeah. And that makes sense.
I mean, he's going to have a nice payday this offseason for sure. Mm-hmm. Some teams might look at him as a starter or a closer. I can't see him being anything but a starter or closer after this year. Sure. It depends on what the Padres' motives are. And again, that's kind of the team that, especially from the relief standpoint, like if those two guys are available, or even if one of them is, that's the number one reliever available, if it's Miller or Morihone or both. And you have to imagine if they do give up Miller, I would imagine Morihone would also be on his way out. So, those are the two biggest pieces being floated. And again, I think I've seen Miller's like trade chances around 40%. I think Passan put 40% or someone put 40%, which feels about right. But I think that's also, I think he was like 40% last year and he did wind up getting traded. So again, it depends on what are the Padres looking for in a return there? And like, I mean, are they looking for like MLB ready? I mean, because like they're not.
They would have to because they traded Leo DeVries for him. Yeah.
Are you trying to just like restock those prospects you traded? That would be kind of weird. But yeah, I mean, and you're not like totally out of the mix here for a place postseason run. Mm-hmm. You're 500. So
yeah,
I feel like it would have to be.
They still have him for three more years.
Yeah. So. And at once, there was a time when that bullpen was really a big strength. But like, Morihone's a free agent at the end of the year. Estrada hasn't been the same guy this year. He's been hurt. I mean, he's throwing 94 in his bullpens, his rehabs and whatnot. So it's like he's not really the same guy. I don't know what we can expect from Estrada. Adam's a free agent at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So then it leaves like Miller and Bradley Rodriguez are like two guys. Like, is Bradley Rodriguez a guy you really have a huge amount of faith in moving forward as your potential closer or, a significant bullpen piece? So, it really doesn't make sense for me. I'm always on the side of I would be looking to trade Mason Miller because I would rather, if I can get a significant bat or a significant starter for a closer, I'm going to do that. But I don't know if that trade's out there for the Padres. So I think he ends up staying put.
Morihone makes sense though.
Morihone's
a free agent.
Yeah, Morihone's the more interesting one where at least you can get something for him. You probably get even as an impending free agent, you probably get a really good return for him.
Right.
Yeah. At least the top 100 prospect, I would imagine. So maybe that's the way they go. And they, Yuki Matsui's been pitching better. They have Peralta as well. So they have some lefties there to fill Morihone's loss. It would be a huge loss, but like they could hypothetically fill that and kind of still compete. So that could be the way. That could be their ticket. But yeah, I don't know. I don't expect Miller to be traded. That would be crazy. But that's AJ Preller, so maybe it just takes one team to entice him, I guess.
Yeah. All right. The Astros are sort of on the fringe right now, but all the reports I've seen is that they're going to buy. I mean, they're two games back from the division and the team above them is the Rangers and they don't feel very strong. So I feel like if I would put a percentage on Josh Hader or Brian Abreu being traded, I mean, Hader would probably be like a 1%, Brian Abreu, maybe a 10%, but that's mostly because Abreu's an impending free agent, but they also really need right-handed reliever. So I would be surprised if either of those guys are traded, really surprised.
You're selling low ultimately on Abreu, unless someone thinks that they can recreate his 2024-25, version of himself. But yeah, I think if anything, the Astros are probably going to add, unless they, lose the next four games or something. But yeah, they feel like a team that should add, especially the AL West is wide open. I don't really have any faith in anyone there. I mean, the Rangers I don't believe in that unless they make significant moves. So the Twins will be buyers at the deadline. Why are the Twins buying? Okay, you see, everyone's buying at the deadline. I don't know who's going to be able to sell. That's the thing. So if one of these teams just commits to selling, like we talked about, like if the you're
Orioles.
Or the Orioles could be the interesting one because like they have really interesting, like, they have really good bullpen pieces and they could kind of clear out some of those guys. You know, they could figure out the bullpen for next year. I think that, I don't know, we'll get into that. But yeah, I see the Astros as trying to compete in the AL West because why not? They have a couple good starters. Jordan's been in the MVP this year. So like, just, let's see what happens. Let's get hot, get into October and see what happens.
Yeah, it usually works out well for them. They made like four straight ALCSs. So Astros have had a lot of postseason success. The Red Sox have really changed their fortunes across the past couple of weeks. They went on that 15-game winning streak, which was humongous for their postseason odds. I think at this point, the Red Sox are 71.4% chance to make the playoffs. So 71%. That's pretty good. I mean, it's not going to be the division. They're 5% chance to win the division, but they're pretty locked in. So when we first talked about this 4 weeks ago, it was like Chapman and Whitlock were guaranteed to be traded. Right. It was guaranteed they were going to be traded. At this point, I don't think either of them is going to be traded.
Yeah, and it sounds like, I mean, they probably had some deals on the table that were interesting for Chapman, but those aren't going to happen. I mean, barring them having like, I mean, if they lose every game this week, maybe they change course, but I think even lose. I mean, that's really a gut punch. The Curtis Meade news, where you make that trade, you get that right-handed bat you're looking for, and then he gets hurt. But I still think that they're I mean, this bullpen is really fun right now, and it's gone from a top-heavy liability to like there's really legitimate depth in this bullpen with Guerrero and Moran. And I mean, I think they should just try to find one more bat and go for it. So I think Chapman stays.
Yeah, makes sense to me. I don't see either of those guys being traded. The Mets, though, they are definitely going to be sellers at this deadline. They are far out of it at this point, 45-62 on the season, 17.5 games back from the Braves in first place. But that means Luke Weaver and Brooks Raley and AJ Minter should all be going. I also wouldn't be surprised if Oscar Brazovan is traded, as he's a lot older than you would expect. And I mean, Devin Williams just signed a contract, but he's he's got one more year. Is that right? No, two more years. Two. Okay.
I think Weaver's got one.
Weaver still has another year.
Yeah. But it's relatively, I mean, given his production, I think it's relatively fair. It's a team friendly deal, I would say. And like, you know, we just talked about like Miller and Hader and Chapman probably not being available. So we might be looking at Luke Weaver being the best reliever available, unless it's Morahone maybe. But yeah, Luke Weaver, it sounds like his name has been brought up. I think I've seen his name from a couple beat writers, like being a name that seems likely to be traded. So I would say Alex Lang, man, he just gave up a walk off. Yeah. No.
I have both Lang and Seawald on my home
that
league, that's a rough day.
That is rough. Steven Cruz, though. But anyway, I think Weaver is probably the most likely to go, like the most significant name, and that's, you know, good for the Mets. They're going to get a lot for Brooks Raley and even AJ Minter too. I bet
all those guys have been good this year. I mean, 1.93 ERA for Weaver, 2.09 ERA for Raley, and a 2.45 ERA for Minter. All those guys are going to definitely get traded at this deadline. I think
silver lining for the Mets season is that they might be selling. They might have the three best relievers available at the deadline. Because again, a lot of these teams want to be buyers. We'll see. I mean, Weaver definitely gets you a good return. Raley should too, as being left-handed, and Minter's been looking a little bit better lately. The velocity's starting to creep back up to normal. So yeah, those three are definitely going to be on the move. Maybe even Brazoban, sell high on him. He's another guy with some term. I think he's got a few years left before he hits free agency, but he's also like 35. So it's like one of those situations where I'm sure he's available for the right cost.
Yeah.
And he's having a career year, so
I would think that they would try to trade him. I don't know if there will be any suitors, but they'll definitely try. The Blue Jays bullpen is one that is pretty loaded. Unfortunately, it's not a lot of guys that are due to hit free agency or are like ideal trade candidates, but Jeff Hoffman is definitely somebody that
his I think name a lot of teams talking about. Yeah.
I mean, he still has one more year of control after this year at an $11 million AAV. So he's pitched so much better than he had through the first couple of months. I mean, to see his ERA at 4.20 now, which is not great, but he's, you know, the unluckiest reliever in baseball over the past couple of seasons. He's got great stuff. And I think there are plenty of teams that would be lucky to have him. I saw him even mocked to go to the Phillies. Just
coming
back into where he had success.
Right. I mean, and he would go right back into the fireman role that he had success in, because they had kind of been using Bolin in that role, but now Bolin's kind of taken over the eighth or seventh inning. So I think, Hoffman, if Weaver and Hoffman are like the two biggest names to move, I think Hoffman probably winds up back in Philly. Both those guys, Weaver, Hoffman, not closing right now. They have some closing experience. For save only leagues, that's those two names are worth keeping an eye on, and trying to figure out where they could land, where they would close is trickier. I think I saw something about Weaver to like the Rangers, and does he take over? I don't think he takes Jacob Latz out of the closer role. He might, but I don't know. I mean, Latz has been so good. I don't think he deserves that. So.
Yeah, I mean, there are many contenders. There are many contenders where if you plug in one of those guys,
it's the same thing with like Mason Miller. Like, think of all the teams that Mason Miller has been like linked to, like the Yankees. And I know he's better than David Bednar, but Mason Miller was also better than Robert Suarez last year, and Suarez kept closing out games for the Padres down the stretch.
Yeah,
so
that was.
I would imagine Miller would not. I would imagine Bednar would still be closing out games for the Yankees.
And that would be Miller silly.
Miller would be a setup guy for 2 months and then be the closer after that. But I don't know. Yeah, worth just keeping in the back of your mind that it's not guaranteed Mason Miller's the closer if he does get traded.
Right. I think if the Nationals or the Pirates or the Cubs, I think if those teams acquire somebody, then we'll probably see a shakeup in the ninth inning. But there's Nationals not many other teams.
Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah, that would be better than what they currently have.
Anything's better. I mean, at this point, just a guy who can strike people out consistently.
That would be cool.
Thing.
The Marlins are surprisingly doing much better than we expected, but they only have a 13% chance to make the playoffs. So if in the next few days they lose a couple games and that falls down into the single digits, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to sell, especially because this is the team with the lowest payroll. They're probably going to want to capitalize on whatever they can. The money hasn't really worked out for Pete Fairbanks, and I think he is set to be a free agent after this year.
Yeah.
So he'll be a free agent. So they could trade him. They could trade Anthony Bender if a team wants to take a chance on him while he's injured. I mean, there's some other guys. I mean, Michael Peterson, maybe not somebody to build around because he's already 32. Calvin Fauché isn't really spectacular. That could really be the team that shakes up the trade deadline market for.
It's another one. Yeah. Because you can move on from Bender's only got 2 more years. That would be a significant get for someone. Maybe you even make Michael Peterson available. I mean, like you said, he's 32, having a breakout now. You could be selling high.
And they have so much potential for next year with the rest of their guys still, on the IL.
You still have really good arms coming back for next year. Ronnie Henriquez, forget about him.
Yeah.
I mean, even Fauché, if you can get something for Fauché at this point, I think you got to do it as well. So. Yeah, I think that's, again, like them and the Orioles could definitely make things more interesting, because if those two teams don't sell and like the Cardinals don't sell, it's like what relievers are really going to be available? It's going to be, someone's going to really overpay for a Luke Weaver or Brooks Raley. The Mets are sitting kind of nice in this relief trade deadline market.
If the Reds had more guys to trade, I think they would as well. They're going to be obvious sellers, but they just don't have many guys. I mean, Pierce Johnson will probably be traded for like cash considerations, but Pagan. Yeah, Pagan will have
he's got the player option. So that might restricts some teams from being actually interested. It's $10 million for next year, but the Nationals would be great for the Nationals. Anyone would be great for the Nationals, but yeah, $10 million for next year for Emilio Pagan is not the worst contract to take on.
No,
I don't think that should, prohibit teams from being interested, but we'll see. It could be. I mean, he's been hit or miss this year, dealing with injuries. I mean, the hamstring thing kind of feels a bit fluky, to be honest. But yeah, I would, if Pagan, you know, he might be looking at Luke Weaver and Emilio Pagan being the two biggest names moved. So yeah, that's, but I haven't seen Pagan's name in a lot of trade deadline speculation or rumors or like,
sort of, yeah, surprising.
Yeah, that's because the Reds are definitely not making the playoffs, right? I'm pretty sure the last time I checked.
No, they're like 3% chance.
Yeah, so yeah, I would imagine Pagan's available for anyone who's willing to take on that player option next year, which
yeah,
he probably picks it up, but you never know.
If the Tigers do decide to trade at the deadline, they definitely have a couple of options to deal. I mean, Drew Anderson's one of them. He's got a 2027 club option. He's been quietly cromulent out of that bullpen there. But Kenley Jansen is the real one, and he's only going to the team if he's closing. I just don't think that a team is going to want to acquire him if he's just going to say, you know what, I'm injured if you're not going to put me in the closer role. But Tigers have a 31% chance to make the playoffs despite being 6 games under .500. So really depends on how they do over the next couple of days. And if they trade Skubal, I would not be surprised. And I would be more surprised if they didn't trade Jansen if they did trade Skubal.
Yeah, I know. If Skubal goes, I think everyone's pretty much on the table.
Yeah.
If Skubal stays, they probably keep guys and just go for it and hope for the best. But yeah, I mean, Jansen's not. It's hard to get excited about him unless you're really desperate. I mean, again, the Nationals, he's better than anyone. He would immediately be an upgrade over that bullpen. But like, there's only so few of those situations of teams. I mean, the Twins, it sounds like the Twins are going to be buyers. Maybe that's in intra-division, but still, maybe because it's a rental that they can make a deal there. I don't know. Jansen at this point doesn't excite me too much, but if Skubal goes and they're dealing people, I would imagine Jansen's going to be on the market as well.
The Cardinals, we talked about a little bit. Riley O'Brien should be traded. JoJo Romero just got his appendix taken out. So I don't know. Maybe
he'll be back at some
traded.
Point.
Yeah. Sure. I think he should get traded. That's it's a guy who's, I don't know, every team's always looking for another lefty reliever. Yeah. The Mariners have always been in on that. So maybe that makes a little bit of sense. They did acquire Jose Ferrer instead. So maybe they're sort of out of that left-handed reliever market. But Romero's been better this year than he's been last year, despite the discrepancy in ERA. I think he's still solid. And then Ryan Stanek's one of those classic just veterans who makes any bullpen deeper.
Yeah, I think, you know, Stanek will definitely have a little interest, you know, and Romero should. And yeah, O'Brien, I think they have to strongly consider. That's kind of like a Lucas Ersig. Reminds me of like when Lucas Ersig got moved a couple of years ago. You know, that type of, you know, kind of an older guy with some term that's going to be cheap for those teams who are looking. I mean, the Nationals, I mean, why not take a chance on Riley O'Brien? Let's see, maybe they could fix them. They won't, but you know, it's worth a look. It's an arm who throws hard. So yeah, someone will probably bite on O'Brien if he's really available.
Yeah, I think they should be 15% chance to make the playoffs for the Cardinals right now. They do have a better record than the Tigers by a lot, but they are in a tougher league. The last team we'll talk about is the Orioles. They have a 20% chance to make the playoffs. I think they should be selling at this point, 52-56 on the season. They have plenty of arms that could be dealt. Andrew Kittredge is one of them. Yennier Cano is another one of them. I think they would have been able to trade Ryan Helsley if he wasn't injured, but I think there will be plenty of suitors if the Orioles decide to sell at the deadline.
Yeah, I think Tyler Wells too. He's sure. Only got two more years, or he's got one more year after this. Maybe even like Rico Garcia is another one of those guys who's 30, going to be 33. He still has a few. He's got like 4 years left before he hits free agency, but he's in his mid-30s, so could be some interesting names there. Again, like the Marlins, they could shake things up, make things interesting if they were to, you know, declare their bullpen available. So we'll see. Or maybe, you know, maybe the Marlins and Orioles kind of, you know, move one or two pieces from their bullpen, not a full, you know, not the Twins-esque, you know, takedown that they had last year where the Twins got rid of their old bullpen. So, yeah, there's definitely potentially there's a good relief market out there, but teams need to really commit towards selling or buying. I think we won't know until this weekend, to be honest. I think it's going to be down to the wire, the way that third wild card spot just makes things more interesting.
Yeah, and we'll see how much the potential of an impending lockout affects the deadline as well, as maybe teams aren't willing to get guys that have multiple years of control remaining because you may miss out on one of those years. So
there's also the teams. I mean, teams that the guys with term, we're talking about term, and you know, the Giants, Angels, and Athletics don't have a ton of interesting, you know, relievers, but if a Hogan Harris or Elvis Alvarado or Zephyr John, Sam Bachman, Eric Miller, one of those guys were to be technically available, I think that could be, you could get a pretty good, one of those teams could get a really good return for those guys, you know.
Sure.
Especially if the market is thin. So definitely be on the look. I bet you there's at least one of those, like, you know, shocking, like, well, that kind of came from out of nowhere. Didn't expect him to be available. Trades to happen.
Just some random reliever. Yeah. That right. You're like, oh, I didn't even know that guy was on the block.
There's always one where it's like he's got 3 years left until he's a free agent, but just
right. The one that always sticks in my mind is the Clay Holmes from the Pirates to the Yankees back in the day. The
Yankees love doing that. I mean, they did it with Duvall, Bednar, kind of. I mean, yeah, they could be, and that could be the team. Could be a fun match for like an Elvis Alvarado or something like that, you know? Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, this is one of the most exciting weeks in baseball leading up to the trade deadline. It sort of gets a little bit dog days of summery in August after we get through all the excitement of July, but we are pushing through. We'll still be here every week for you talking relief pitchers. And like I said at the top of the podcast, next week on Tuesday, we'll break down all of the happenings and the trades that occurred over this upcoming weekend. So as I expect many of you guys are, we are also very excited for the trades. It's one of my favorite things about baseball. It's one of my favorite things about sports. It's just the ramifications of roster moves. It's definitely a nerdy sentence that I just said, but
roster construction is my passion.
I love the off season. Sometimes like the season's over and I'm like, you know what? I sort of like the off season even more than the season. Like I just, I loved playing MLB The Show and just simulating games and just, you know, being the GM and stuff.
You got to upgrade to out of the park baseball. We got to get you on that.
This was the first year I didn't even buy MLB The Show.
Really?
Like the first year since like 2009, I've bought it every single year. And it's just, it just was not calling my name. And I don't know. I guess I just haven't been playing much. But yeah, OTP is definitely one of those. But it's, I don't play a lot of, I'm a Mac guy, so I don't play a lot of computer games.
You could play it on the Mac, but yeah, I hear you. I get you.
Yeah, it's not something that I use for gaming. I did start playing. Yeah. I started playing. Shoot, what's that game? It's a space shooting trilogy. What's it called? This is a great way to end a podcast. Let's see. Video game. It's like on the tip of my tongue too, which is terrible. It's a console game. Oh gosh, that's terrible. Mass Effect. There we go.
Mass Effect. Okay.
Yeah. So I'd never played those, and they came out with the trilogy, and it was like all three games on sale for like $5. Sure. And I was like, oh, let's go.
Why not?
So yeah. I just started playing that. I don't play a lot of shooting games. I sort of suck at them, but I do like space theme. So that's exciting. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Maybe we should start a video game podcast. I'm sure we'll get blown out of the water by Ben Lindbergh once again. That guy is just a podcasting master. But that'll do it for this episode of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and let everybody know what you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on socials at I Am Rick Graham. As always, or at least, you know, now getting back into the regular flow of things, putting out daily SP or daily RP reliever streamers and relief roundup articles, as well as every Tuesday night, putting out the updated relief rankings for closers, saves only, holds, and save plus holds. So yeah, we're from now to the end of the year back on that schedule.
Busy man, and he's a father, guys. He's a busy man. Yeah. You can catch me on the First Pitch podcast 4 days a week. You can catch me doing the weekend editions of the SP Roundup. And this upcoming weekend, I'm going to start doing the Plus Pitch podcast. So you'll get to hear even more of me. That's me podcasting 7 times a week. I hope you guys like my voice. You can also find more of my work over at Baseball HQ, where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, Diamondbacks, and Angels. And you can find links to all of my work over at crumplerbaseball.com. But that's going to do it for this episode 169 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.